Welcome to security review of the last year. My name is Marcus. I will give you a bit of a retrospective of the last year, put on some highlights, but also tell you about our work that we are doing, just in a pretty high-level way, so it will not have many technical details. So first, who are we? We are the SUSE security team. We are currently, let me count, 8 people. Our boss has changed recently, so his name is Ivan Teplin. He's been with us for 1 month now. We have one project manager, that's me, and we have several security engineers. So in alphabetical order, we have Alexander, Alexandros, Johannes, Malte, Matthias, and Robert. And Alexandros and Robert are sitting close to the back over there. The rest is unfortunately not here. We are still not complete. We've been still looking for a good security engineer. We have one very good candidate that we are trying to get, and one open position that we will also planning to fill. So what are we doing? The work that we are doing is split into two major parts that we'll go about separately. We have a proactive part and a reactive part. The reactive part is handling security issues, handling security incidents, reacting on these security incidents. We are doing that for all the SUSE products, for all the open SUSE products and distributions, but not for the kind of security issues that address physical security or website security for SUSE. We are only working for the SUSE Linux and open SUSE products. The team is split into two parts. The reactive part has me as the project manager overseeing it, and we have Alexander, Alexandros, Robert, and potentially new guy working in this reactive team and share the load in between. The proactive side, where we do software audits, like what you can imagine, pen testing, audits. We approve the product releases that we do. So basically the release managers come to us and say, is my product secure? We do a final check of the product and give our green go ahead. And we do also a lot of work before the security shipment during the development phase. And that part of the team consists currently of Johannes, Malte, and Matthias, and another potential new hire that we hopefully will be getting this year. So in case you're looking, you're wondering who, what our names are, these are the names that you as a SUSE developer or open SUSE contributor will likely encounter during your work with the security team. So let me first talk about the reactive security, which is likely the more visible part of our work. We react on any reported security issues on our distribution, as mentioned, both on SLI and on OpenSUSE. To handle this load, and I will give you some numbers in a minute, we have clearly specified roles so that everyone knows what to do, everyone knows exactly what he's been assigned to do, and so that there is no confusion. And we have split this into so-called incident managers and update managers, where we have currently two or three incident managers and one update manager. So the load is distributed evenly between the team. That role rotates monthly so that it doesn't get too boring and too one-sided for anyone. What is our task in the reactive side? Is we coordinate fixing the security issues from begin, from getting knowledge to it until the end meaning release of all the updates and doing all the bug closing. We are not doing the fixes ourselves. We do that, we delegate it to the package maintainers, either the SUSE ones or the community maintainer, depending on who is assigned in the build service to the package. We also don't look at the source patches that get submitted, get fixed. That is also done by the OBS or EBS source review teams. The testing is delegated to the QA teams, and these days there's a huge part of it done by automated testing just as Oliver told us before, mostly it's done by OpenQA. Especially OpenSUSE is only tested by OpenQA at this time. There's the potential on OpenSUSE to have a testing repository added and use that, but we very strongly rely on OpenQA testing for OpenSUSE maintenance. The next part where we're involved is the release of the update and everything afterwards, the documentation. Most of the documentation is automatically generated just because there's so many of it. Only for specific incidents we do manual documentation work. So how does it look like? How do we handle the incidents? Where do we interface with the packages? We use the OpenSUSE Bugzilla. We have a specific summary line tagging to make queries in Bugzilla easier. So we start with a val-0 or val-1 prefix, then put in the CVE number as a prefix. We also put in the package name and then a short summary of the issue. That makes Bugzilla searches very easy for us, for you, and for everyone who wants to just look at or find such a thing. We fill in the Bugzilla report with the description, with links to patches, with the report users so that our QA can verify it or the packager can verify it, and whatever other information is needed. And we assign it afterwards then to the package maintainer itself for fixing. If the package maintainer then has questions, he can always come back to us, set need info, ask a question in the bug report, and ask us if he needs help for fixing. Internally, we also use a tool called Smash that tracks the effectiveness and the ratings of code streams for the SUSE Linux Enterprise products. Rating, we have a simplified rating. It's called low, moderate, important, critical. So four steps that kind of easy to understand and to look at. But we also use an industry standard rating called Common Vulnerability Scoring version 3, which has a lot of indicators which in turn turn into number between 0 and 10. That is also used in various industry standards to rate how fast security updates need to be applied or fixed. We evaluate and mark what is affected on which SLE code stream. That to some degree also reflects OpenSUSE code streams, and we are also planning at some point in the future to directly track OpenSUSE also with this tool. And there's one thing, for the minor security issues, we decide occasionally it can wait. It doesn't need to be fixed right away because it's unlikely exploitable or it's really a minor issue. Or if it is a bigger issue, then we request an update via our workflow management tool. So first statistics as promised. I have a query running since 2006. And you notice some trends, so that's the open bugs per week, and it starts at 2006, and on the right is the 2019, last week. So we started around 11 bugs per week, and it really continued until 2014, and then it got very noisy. Knowing from the security point of view, it's that happened because a lot of more automated bug finding was happening. So with fuzzing, with more attention on specific tools, with automated bug finding, people were suddenly finding much more bugs in the software. One big example is ImageMagick, for instance, where over the last years there have been found like 500 security issues or similar. What is interesting is also, however, that it now starts to decrease a bit. So we were at a peak from around 40 bugs open per week, but the last 1.5 years, have seen a slight decline. That might mean that some of the means of automatic bug finding are exhausted, or it might mean that people are focusing themselves more on different topics, or that someone is not opening enough CVEs or classifying CVEs anymore. So while I was thinking that the trend would only go upwards, I was kind of disproven here. Let's see what the next years will bring. Short look at our incident tracking system that we use internally. We are getting in this ticket system around 100 issues per day, but we open bugs only for around 5 to 10, depending on the whatever is being found. So having a good UI where we can track it, you can think of it mostly like a ticketing system that additionally has on top the rating and the effectiveness marking that we do. Here's a bit longer list where we really already have specified ratings and affected packages. So how does the update management on our side work? So the packager, after getting knowledge and after fixing the package, he submits it. The security team, the update manager in this case, accepts the update, writes the metadata that's shown to users that gets displayed later on in the automated generated documentation, like the summary, a description, a human readable description, and a list of issues in a machine readable format. We check if it's, of course, it's building. We have some bots that also catch it if it's not building before these days, but under certain circumstances might not build and might need some help. And we then forward it to QA. So basically QA, in that case, as said, both automated and also manual QA. The automation does these days all the regression testing. So regression testing is no longer done manually, but our QA teams do manual bug fix verification. So they verify that a bug is present before and that it is fixed afterwards. Once QA is finished, we basically only then press the release button. Most of the documentation, the emails that you see, the patches, that is all automatically generated. But for bigger issues, we do some manual work. yeah. So look at our, we have a tooling also for the update management in SUSE Linux Enterprise. As you see, we have, in that case, we have 138 updates in QA or waiting for a QA engineer. With the amount of packages that we release like 50 updates, 60 updates per week on the SLE side, around 20 to 30 on the OpenSUSE side. Without tooling, it's really not manageable anymore. This is tooling that we developed ourselves within the maintenance team, with dedicated engineers looking at it, that makes our work more efficient and easier. Yeah, so what we deliver in the end, as mentioned, of course, the updates themselves get to your system. We send out notifications per email. They are uploaded to website for the SLE updates. We also send, of course, emails to the OpenSUSE announcement lists. And we generate advisory data in a standard XML format called CVRF, Common Vulnerability Reporting Format. I hope I got it right, because that's all acronyms. But that basically encodes the advisory in a very big XML blob. and can be then used for importing into ticket systems, etc. We also generate other information. So on a per CVE information, we generate for every CVE we find and evaluate and fix. We have one page on our website where you can see description, ratings, effectiveness, and what we have released. Also, this similar data is provided by us or generated by us also for machine-readable and machine-readable format called OVAL, Open Vulnerability and Assessment Language. Yet again, a very big XML format that you can run through an interpreter and see if my system, if the system is still affected by a CVE or not, and what needs to be updated. So some statistics for this year compared to last year. Yeah, not this year, but 2018, just to have a complete year. So the number of CVEs that we looked at is 3,000, so 300 less than last year. Kind of coincides with the open bug trends a bit. We opened around 2,280 bugs. That's 300 less than in 2017. And if you look at the classification, so I just put in the big numbers, same number of approximately the kernel bugs, but way less image matching and graphics magic bugs. So it really 170 bugs less, or CVEs less for image matching and graphics magic, just because there the bug finding has, that they are using fuzzers has exhausted the bugs, basically. It has not completely exhausted them. As you see, it's still 90 bugs, which is quite an amount, but it's not as massive as in 2017. Similar also for Firefox. Firefox, 50 bugs less than in 2017. So they're still fixing and finding bugs in those code bases, but it gets better over time. The number of updates that we released for SLE, it looks much higher, but the reason for that is that we have more service packs and more products in 2018 and in 2017. I've not equalized it to the number of service packs. That would have been a bit too complicated with the general support and LTSS support. For OpenSUSE, that is a bit more comparable, even though we have 42.3 and 15.0. We have released some more updates for OpenSUSE than in 2017. And I also looked at how much we import from SLE, and we import around 50% from SLE at this time. Total number of CVEs fixed. We have 100 CVEs less fixed, also explained by the image magic decrease mostly. And these are the numbers for OpenSUSE and SLE. They don't add up because they share CVE space. So one thing that the reactive team does is, I mentioned it before, for some issues we do specific documentation or more documentation, and these are the so-called high-impact vulnerabilities, the things that you read in the press about, or even on a Tagesschau or on CNN. Started all with Heartbleed and Shellshock, and went even into this year with System Down and just lately the MDS CPU issue. These issues are special, so usually you have to think that our reactive incident work is just, it's a pipeline. We are opening bugs, updates get processed, packages get submitted, get released, and it just takes a while. But for these high impact vulnerabilities that have either a severe technical impact or where people really want the fix right now, we need a quicker reaction. We also need more communication of under what circumstances are we affected, what is the real impact, is it really that big of a problem, and also documentation for e.g. the CPU issues. We need to document what options there are that customers can use to configure their system. And especially if there are also tricky fixes, if you need to do something manually on your system to mitigate it. So we handle this a bit differently, with much higher attention, with direct attention, and we even have a specific team dedicated called the Emergency Update Team that goes and does these fixes themselves, coordinates them, including even weekend work or late night work. Yeah, so if one or two guys from the Emergency Update Team are also here, Simon from the OpenSUSE board is one of these members, and Peter, I've not seen yet, but also a member. So last year I talked a bit about Stacklash and what we are planning to do and what we are doing. That was something from 2017, general problem where the stack growing down and MAP areas growing up would collide and could be exploited. And what we had done already was mitigating that in the kernel with bigger stack gaps that could not be jumped over. We already had prepared GCC updates that were generating binary code that no longer has this problem. And that's something that only started in effect last year, is that we released products OpenSUSE Leap 15.0 and SLE 15 that already had this mitigation enabled. And we also started releasing last year's updates for Enterprise 12 and also Leap 42.3, that where these packages that we released were no longer affected by the Stacklash issue. And our efforts paid themselves off, and that's something I want to show off, is because in January there was a so-called System Down exploit of the Journal D, the System D Journal D, where a regular user space program could gain root execution by just sending a specific log message to the journal D. But as we had already built systemd with the stack clash protector, also for within all the updates, both SUSE Linux Enterprise and OpenSUSE were already fixed. So doing this proactively, building the packages proactively with this option really paid out, we were not affected by this problem beginning of this year. Yeah, so the big topic is, and I want to go that in a bit more detail, the CPU issues. So last year I also talked about a bit of Meltdown and Spectre already, but they got some new friends this year and last year. The general overview is side channel information leak attacks that use speculative or out of order execution. Two big classes, Spectre, it's a speculative execution of branches that might not be taken or are not taken, leaks information that happen to be accessed in those non-taken branches. And the other part is the Meltdown class of CPU side channel issues, basically lack of access control during this kind of out of order execution. Meltdown itself was because during out-of-order execution, the protection bit for ring zero protected pages was not checked, so everything from the kernel could be read from user space. And various flavors of that, like page not present bit, also some high-level bits like an MDS that we had, so various other flavors of those were also found. Fortunately, none of them as severe as Meltdown itself, but various flavors of both have been found. So the problem with those is that as there are CPU issues, they need, we had long embargo times. Also for the last issue, we had over 9 months of embargo time. Just to prepare the patches, get every industry, other operating and hypervisor vendor under the same umbrella, within timing, get the microcode updates ready. Intel still really takes like 3 months to half a year to get microcode fixes ready for their CPUs. So it was kind of long embargo times. And we of course need to facilitate it in our kernels, test that, and be ready on the date of shipment because these issues still attract quite a lot of attention. One issue is, of course, that they have also almost all of those fixes get some performance losses, which is especially in a cloud provider space not a good thing if suddenly your cloud runs 10% slower or something. I said it become mostly a new family: Meltdown, Spectre Variant 1, 2, 4, Bound Check Bypass Store, Lazy FPU, that was possible to leak FPU registers. L1 terminal fault and NetSpectre happened in 2018, and even in 2019 we found, that's misspelled spoiler, Smuffer Spectre's port smash, and just from 14th of May, micro-architectural data sampling called also Fallout Whittle or Zombie Load Attack. So the good news is that for a number of them we have mitigations, or we have the potential to mitigate them completely. Usually the Meltdown family, that is occasionally done with microcode and kernel mitigations acting together. And we know how to fix the other ones that are mostly bug classes. And the other good news is that the affected Intel, largely Intel CPUs, Intel has been started shipping new CPUs, Cascade Lake and newer, that are no longer affected by the Meltdown problem. So it's good for Intel that they are selling more CPUs. It's also good for us that we get back our performance and security. The not so good news, or the bad news, is that lately there have been some issues found that are exploitable when using hyperthreading. So hyperthreading is where a CPU core has running multiple threads of execution and they share various resources like load buffers, store buffers, computational units, and so on. And the last attacks L1TF and the microarchitectural data assembling, they were largely exploiting these smaller buffers shared between hyperthreads. So the mitigations that we have, they are effective if stuff executes in serial way, like user space to root, to kernel space and back, that is okay, but for threads on the same core, for separate hyperthreads on the same core, it is hard to solve because we cannot really influence what runs on the other thread. So we, not in the current setting. So the obvious solution is, of course, to schedule only processes with the right privileges on the same core. That's called gang scheduling or co-scheduling. Unfortunately, that's not really, there's no really working code for that, because doing it in the right way that cannot be exploited is very tricky, and likely has a similar performance impact than just switching off hyper-threading altogether. So there are some draft patches for the Linux kernel, and I think also for Xen, but these are not yet production ready. We hope that they get to a point where they are production ready and performant, and then we will go and deploy them, but so far they are sadly not ready yet. So if you are really concerned about on your machine having an attacker running on the same core, trying to steal your secrets, the only way that is currently there is to disable hyper-threading on your system. Yeah, so we had like 8 different issues, 7 different mitigations, and there appeared a website called Make Linux Fast Again that put in all the kernel command line options that are needed to get the full performance back. And you see, if I now hide it and you try to remember it, even I couldn't remember it. So it needs a simpler front end. And the kernel guys, the Linux kernel developers, found, yes, it definitely needs a simpler configuration option, and they just implemented with the 5.1 or 5.2 kernel, I think 5.1 kernel, they implemented an option, a kernel bootline option called mitigations that controls all of the CPU mitigations at once. And it has 3 easy settings. It has the setting off, just disabling it, getting back all the performance. It has the setting auto, like it will select based on your CPU type what is needed or what is not needed as mitigation. So if you have a newer CPU, it will not switch on meltdown protection. And it also has the option of disabling hyper-threading if you so desire. At SUSE, we have discussed it on various levels and decided with going with the default of auto. So leaving hyper-threading enabled, leaving that kind of performance still available, but at least enabling all the standard mitigations that are available. And to make it easier also for our users, we have integrated this into the Yast installer. So if you install, the installation overview will have in a security section a CPU mitigations option that you can click on, and you can easily change from auto to either off or auto or no SMT, depending on your security needs. So there's one last bad thing of that, is that some of the issues are bug classes that are not getting fixed in the processor. So Spectre Variant 1, that is basically branch prediction or speculation over branches that are not taken, this is will not be getting fixed in the processor, but this, we are supposed to fix it in the program code in the kernel or in user land. It's mostly a bug class, so if you want a fix, there's not a single line of code that needs to be fixed, but it's in a lot of places. It's in a lot of places, and there's currently no generic way to do it. There has been some research into compiler-based mitigation of that, of Spectre Variant 1, but unfortunately the performance loss of doing this in a compiler is quite high. So it's really like 50% performance loss if you do it via a compiler. So it's under control in the kernel. The kernel has deployed things like index masking and the special the respective fences that are needed to control that. Other user land code has also been already supplied with it, like some JavaScript, just-in-time compilers, and so on. But this might be an issue where we are getting, where we still need to take care about in the future. There are two others that were only recently published, Smother Spectre and PortSmash. And these are not leaking direct information, but these look at what other, these can find out what the other CPU thread is doing. So if it's doing a lot of vector stuff, if it's doing a lot of multiplications or additions. By monitoring that, you can find out, for instance, if there's a cryptographic algorithm running on the other CPU that is not specifically prepared for that, you can find out what kind of keys the other cryptographic algorithm is just processing and find out the content of the keys. So the only way is to fix that currently is to really write cryptographic code and any other code that could be snooped on, where information could be gained on from snooping on, in a constant time manner. So having constant time compares, constant time multiplications, additions, and so on. Fortunately, a lot of cryptographic code is already prepared for that, because this kind of computational side channel issue is not a new thing, but it becomes more urgent with this knowledge about this exploitation of issue of via hyperthreading. Yeah, so enough for the reactive security part. What is our proactive team doing? Their general mission statement is making products secure before shipment and implement a secure development lifecycle within SUSE. We are doing this at various stages. We are doing this in automated fashion, in a manual fashion. So the first thing that comes to mind here is automated checks during build. That similar to what we do with MakeCheck, we also do for security-ish parts. Like if you add a new setuid binary, your build will fail if it's not whitelisted by us. If you add a new dbus service or policy kit rule and it's not whitelisted by us, your build will fail and we will tell you to contact the security team for whitelisting. In that time, you open a bug, we look at the code, we tell you where the bugs are, and you fix the bugs and then we whitelist it. That includes all other things, system network services or whatever security interface you have in your package or in your product. We are not doing this just before the release, but we are doing this during the whole process. So basically similar to the OpenSUSE factory model, all these audits are rolling. Especially as we are also working with factory, the factory developers come to us, say they have a new dbus service, can we please review that? We review it, it gets approved, and at some point in time it gets shipped via OpenSUSE Leap or SUSE Linux Enterprise. These are largely based on the packages that we're doing, but we're also doing product audits. Currently we are doing product audits or the final product send-off audit a month before usually the product is getting shipped. So OpenSUSE Leap 15.1 was reviewed a month ago. Johannes took a look at it for a week and fortunately found no big issues there. Yeah, so even if we are the SUSE security team, what we are doing, as said, we work in factory. A lot of stuff that we are doing is both done in OpenSUSE, occasionally even in OpenSUSE first, and then later on in SUSE Linux Enterprise. Yeah, but our focus is, of course, getting SUSE Linux Enterprise secure, but OpenSUSE is our main driver of work there. Just to look a bit at the workload that we had around the same number of audit requests in 2018 than in 2017. But we were able to process more because our team has grown. I've not gotten those numbers, unfortunately. What does the proactive team also do? We add new hardening methods. Last year I talked a bit about Pi support. What we're currently working on is that we had LDFlex, RelRo. We had for a long time already, but now we also want to deploy the -z now hardening for ELF binaries. And we want to also move some compiler warning checks that we are currently doing in post-build checks to directly to W-error options, which is done by the compiler team, so that your build will not just emit warnings, but it will directly fail if something is wrong. Our colleague Carol, fortunately no longer in the security team, but now in a different role, he's a very big YubiKey fan, and he just has now a YubiKey workshop at the YubiKey talk yesterday. That's something that we added or improved upon in OpenSUSE Leap in the last year, and also shipped in SLES 12 as before in SLES 15 for two-factor authentication. Last year also saw some GhostScript security issues. I didn't mention them earlier, but what we did with GhostScript is that we improved the hardening for GhostScript. So for image magic and graphics magic that can convert PostScript to images, we now ship two configuration files. One configuration file has these coders disabled, and one configuration has these enabled, depending on your use case. And the default is that we are disable them because GhostScript is still a very risky tool and might have more security issues than we have already fixed. We also disabled PostScript display in places where it's not really needed or made it optional. For tools that you wouldn't even have known that it does that, we disabled that. We also tried confinement using AppArmor, so our general confinement tool that fortunately has not been very successful yet, because GhostScript is in use of a lot of pipe modes and a lot of settings that AppArmor is not fully, where we cannot fully control it with AppArmor. We had quite some success, but we had also some kind of angry users that were no longer able to run the preferred tool. We also do audits for non-distribution products like cloud and SUSE Cloud, SUSE Storage. We add, review the new bigger tools that get added. So a lot of things happening at SUSE is adding stuff on top of distributions. We're also occasionally planning on embedding engineers into product teams. While we haven't done this in the last year, that is an option that we always consider, that especially in bigger agile teams, that we occasionally help out and send someone to assist them for some weeks. And we have challenging new products like the container management product, CASP, also the cloud application platform that is using Cloud Foundry based on top of CASP, on top of OpenStack, which are very complicated products, quite hard to understand products, quite hard to get an overview over. And of course, in turn, making these also hard to make secure products. But this is something that we'll also be looking into in the next years even more closely. One side projects that we are doing is certifications. One of this is directly security related. This is the DISA STIC. STIC stands for Secure Technical Implementation Guide, and is just another formalized word for hardening guide. It's really a formalized thing, largely coordinated by the US government and especially the US military, where they really describe in a step-by-step formal approach how to secure a system. And they have various methods that this can be handed out, in a textual description form, where you have 200, 300 rules that the administrator goes through, checks, makes the changes, gets the next rule, checks, makes the changes, and so on. Or it can be done in an automated format, in a so-called benchmark or SCAP format. SCAP is Secure Content Automation Protocol. And we are also currently working and providing this to our enterprise customers, but the same can, only with some small adjustments, also likely deployed on OpenSUSE. So it's basically what we had earlier as hardening guides in a very formal textual form, and later on in a XML form. We also do cryptographic certifications. Just recently, the NIST Also another US government body released the FIPS 140-3 standard, basically describing crypto parameters that your cryptographic system has to fulfill. And also we plan to work on a common criteria certification, which we did for the last enterprise servers. We also plan to do that for the enterprise server 15. Where the common criteria certification describes the whole development process and the product that comes out of it. Yeah, so how are we publicly visible? Excepting, of course, the service we provide to SUSE and OpenSUSE. What we do benefits all the upstream open source projects. They get more secure, so even other vendors benefit from our work. We are recently participating in the Nuremberg IT security meetup called 0911.org, and we are hosting every second instance at our offices, and we are presenting occasionally at conferences like this or other security conferences. Yeah. We are planning on extending our presence more as we are growing. Currently it's not that much, but we are trying to improve on that. Yeah, so that's it from my side. Put on our landing page and our main contact address where you can address security questions here. And and that we are looking for some good engineers. Any questions? Okay, so I will be hanging around here if you have questions later on. And thank you for listening.